we present Sigrid Schultz, Mutual's American observer in Germany, with her observations on the war situation. Tonight, Ms. Schultz will speak to us from Bern, Switzerland. European broadcasts are subject to censorship at the point of origin. We take you now to Bern, Switzerland.
Hello, Mutual Broadcasting System. This is Sigrid Schultz, the Berlin correspondent of the Chicago Tribune, speaking to you from Bern. We had an air raid alarm here tonight, but in view of the fog, we don't know who or where visitors were. While you at home are arguing about the presidential campaign and are preparing to make history with a ballot in hand, history in Europe is being decided by bombs and explosives, suffering, daring, and endurance. The siege of England goes on relentlessly. The air war continues. Yet we again hear rumors of new offensives to come. For months last winter, everybody sat tense, waiting to see where the giant German war machine would strike. You heard allegedly well-founded reports that the big action was coming in the Mediterranean, and then the masters of Germany carried their blitzkrieg to Denmark and Norway, and before the world had recovered from the surprise, they struck at the Netherlands and Belgium and surprised the world even more by overrunning France. Now, we have a whole assortment of reports and quite concrete moves. What with German troops in Romania, where they stood in 1917 and 1918 when Russia broke down, with German units admittedly in Ethiopia, with the Italians threatening Egypt, with a best friend of the authoritarian powers in Spain, Senor Suñer, becoming foreign minister and firmly establishing his pro-Nazi, pro-fascist phalangists in key posts in Spain, and, as he himself said, quote, in Spain's foreign organizations, unquote. But most of your true strategists agree that these are mere side issues. The big thing today is the Battle of England. Will Germany attempt the invasion of England or not? We now know that before last spring's blitzkrieg, Germany was working overtime, training troops for special, carefully worked out assignments, until these troops could almost do what was required of them in their sleep. The machine-like precision with which Germans took key positions in Belgium or in northeastern France showed skill achieved after dogged hard work. Nothing was improvised. Continental military experts who view the situation now believe that Germany is again preparing and again waiting for the moment to start a new offensive in which everything is prepared down to the last detail. The military expert of the Neue Zürcher Zeitung offers an analysis of the possibility of the German invasion of the British Isles, which is quite interesting. He believes in the possibility of an attempted German invasion of England, despite the British fleet, and before complete superiority in the air has been achieved by the Germans. He concedes that the Germans still have a numerical edge on the English, but that the British airplanes and flyers proved efficient. It is held by those who believe in the possibility of an attempted invasion of England that the German fleet, though small, is big enough to protect a possible fleet of transport ships across the Channel. Germany's numerous speedboats can cross the Channel in 30 minutes, the experts say. The English fleet must necessarily be scattered, and some experts doubt whether its units could concentrate quickly enough to prevent an attempt to land at one or more points. The Neue Zürcher Zeitung expert holds that at the moment, quote, Britain's coastal defenses could, at best, disturb but not prevent the landing of troops, unquote, from the sea. Then we come to the question of the possibility of landing troops by air, to the problem of parachute men and transport planes for troops, which made their first appearance on battlefields in this war. Experts point out that parachute men are the elite of the infantry who volunteer for service, fighting lone-handed to destroy key positions, bridges, railroads, and prepare the ground for the arrival of transport planes carrying troops which are to work with them. In Germany's blitzkriegs, veterans of the parachute have been developed. Quite a number of continental experts express the belief that the volunteers, which the English can oppose to parachutists, assuming an invasion by air is attempted, would not be able to cope with them, unless they are speedily providing with the most modern of equipment. In view of the German air attacks on England, the experts ask, would the roads and the railroads be such that regular troops could reach the scene of action quickly? The Neue Zürcher Zeitung expert believes that the Germans have at least 1,000 big troop transport planes of the Junkers 52 type. Each of these, he holds, can carry about 20 men with their full infantry equipment. Theoretically, this would make it possible to quickly land whole battalions at points prepared by the parachute men. Naturally, these transport planes would, if they go into action, be accompanied by pursuit ships and destroyers to fight English flyers defending their island. But Americans who have had experience with expeditionary forces point out that the question of getting troops across as narrow a stretch as the Channel may in these modern days not be an impossibility. But modern troops need modern equipment, and lots of it. Tanks, anti-tank guns, anti-aircraft guns, and ammunition. Reports of the German High Command show that one of the most effective weapons in the Blitzkrieg in France was a big anti-aircraft gun, which saw service against tanks, fortifications, airplanes, and an occasional naval unit in the Channel ports. The expert of the Zürcher Zeitung declares that the Junkers 52 can carry small field pieces to wherever the High Command wants them sent, but it cannot carry motorized anti-aircraft. Europe's experts ask, if an invasion is attempted, will the British be able to avoid the mistake their late French allies made and remain united in face of all dangers and strike quickly? The attacker can and will work out his plans to the last detail and arrive with a clear plan of campaign. His would be the initiative, and the defender would have to prove a master in the art of not only fighting, but of improvising on a big scale. Which of the two opponents will have the biggest supply of modern weapons within easy reach when the Battle of England is really fought out on English soil is one of the many questions observers in Europe are asking each other today as they watch the conflict, the outcome of which will decide the fate of at least Europe and Africa. In the meantime, the authoritarian powers are strengthening their hold over the countries they occupied or took under their protection. In Norway, everybody must turn over his weapons to the authorities. The Norwegians never went in much for military drill, but they were proud huntsmen who never for the past centuries gave up their weapons. In faraway Romania, German forces took over control of the Romanian roads. Polish officers and members of the government, like Mr. Beck, who fled from Poland after a defeat, are still in Romania. They can easily be apprehended if the Germans choose to do so, since German guards control the important roads. In Berlin, optimism has increased since the German capital experienced only one air raid last week. That does not mean that anybody is relaxing his war activity. On the contrary, wherever you turn, you see war consciousness. Even the women's magazines, which formerly just wrote about fashions and art and frivolity in general. One of the most arty of these magazines devotes pages to the, quote, African hour. You might think that is romantic, moonlight near the Sphinx or such, but no. The African hour deals with a school where young women interested in work in the German colonies are being trained to become model farmers. You see photographs of the young women doing their daily dozen in riding kit right before their horses. Another picture shows them looking efficient and expert, finger on the trigger of their guns, ready to shoot. Another fashion magazine shows the telephone girls who serve at military headquarters in occupied territory in marching formation in their dark gray outfits with overseas caps at a jaunty angle. Simultaneously, the cultural campaigns of organizations such as the German Academy in Munich are being continued on a big scale. Its president, in a recent meeting in Munich, declared that the number of teachers teaching German abroad must be increased. This winter, these semi-official lecturers are to number 150, but the president of the German Academy stated that this number would soon be raised to 500, and their mission will be to, quote, awaken the pride in the German language, unquote, wherever they go. There are lots of things which puzzle the foreign observer and the local observer at that in Europe. Why, for instance, did Herr Himmler, chief of all German police forces, go to Spain? Why is Signor Mussolini inspecting troops somewhere in northern Italy, supposedly in proximity of the Yugoslav border? In the meantime, whoever can is stocking up on supplies. Switzerland, the traditional land of cream, butter, and cheese, is rationing her fats. Her linen, silks, and wools remain available for those who can buy. But saving experts urge everybody to save wherever he can. The quality of the Swiss goods remains superlative, but the sales girls are just a jump ahead of the times here as everywhere else. When they sell you something made out of wool, they'll roll their eyes and say, that's still last year's quality. Real good old stuff, madam. Gone are the days when they sought to lure you with the newest of the newest just straight from Paris. It is the past that holds the glamour and the future which must be faced. This is Sigrid Schultz returning you to Mutual Broadcasting System, New York.